Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
What's up, you mutts? It's another edition of Mail Time. It's presented by Roman. Roman Swipes. I used to do Roman Swipes, speaking hypothetically. Now I'm doing Roman ad reads as a testimony, and I can fully confirm their effectiveness. It's one of those things. Why have we not been doing this for a longer time? And why is this not, you know, there are just certain things with sex. It's like you buy your condoms, you get the pill, maybe you have some lube. You have all these accessories that you buy anyway. Put the swipes into the mix. When it's time to go down, rip it open, rub it on, and I promise you it's going to be more enjoyable for everyone. If there's any sort of maybe just a little bit of shyness or awkwardness, get over that, because I promise you it will open, it will broaden your horizons. Roman swipes are just $5 when you order a monthly package, and they get delivered right to your door discreetly, so nobody knows where they are. And even, but again, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the idea, all these things that are like comes in discreet packaging so no one knows. It's not like it's the 1700s with the Puritans anymore, okay? You know, we don't need things sent in like unmarked envelopes and black packages anymore. It's like, look around at social media, look around the internet, the things that we see and talk about. Nobody gives a fuck anymore, you know what I mean?
So it's nice they have the option, but sure. Yeah. Roman swipes, that's not the thing that needs to be in an unmarked package anymore. There's probably a few things that somebody could find that they're getting shipped to their door, but Roman swipes is not one of them.
That ain't the one, man. It's as easy. It takes like 2 seconds. You open it up. It's got a little paper swipe that's, you know, it's soaked in the material. You rub it on. There's no scent. There's no smell. It doesn't no taste. It doesn't affect your partner. It just numbs you up good. And once you resume, it's funny where it's just like, oh, well, this is going to last at least twice as long. Like, this is just I just don't feel like I'm going to come. It's great. So, it's easy, effective, fast acting, doesn't require a prescription. And like I said, cheap, man. Go to GetRoman.com/mailtime. You get your first box of swipes. I think they come with like, I want to say like 5 swipes in a box. So $5, $1 a swipe. They look like almost like a little condom package or like a little towelette package. And it's just $5 when you choose a monthly plan over at Roman. So you can be there to fix, you know, your hair, your skin, your health, whatever, whatever else it is from Roman that you're getting done, might as well get the swipes on top of it for just $5. GetRoman.com/mailtime. We're going to have Rocket join us in a little bit. And then Sarah Turney, who is leading the chart on the latest true crime sensation in my mind. And I talked about it with Jared, but I do believe that this Alyssa Turney case is, we're kind of watching a true crime story unfold. For like the first time, we're in the middle of it. So we'll get into, we've been doing crime dogs each and every week, and Rocket's going to join us. There's an announcement regarding crime dogs and the future of that. But mail time in general, it's always a work in progress, and we're always talking directly to our audience about what we're doing here, because you guys have been like the biggest ride or die fans since day one. And as much as the podcast is also about stuff, topics, conversation that we have, I also feel like the podcast is about the podcast, you know, the future, like the history of this podcast, how it came and went and how it's back and what it's going to be and how it's going to evolve. And it's almost like just giving you guys an update with what we're doing professionally each and every week. So, you know, mail time started because I wanted to do all the stuff, all the nerdy stuff, all the music stuff, all the things that me and John aren't always talking about, that me and Brendan are. You know, I wanted an outlet to do that, because as much as KFC Radio became like my life, there's also this other side of me that just doesn't fit the KFC Radio realm. And that's what mail time is. And true crime was part of that. And the true crime wave has kind of taken over the last few weeks. And I want to get back to some of the other shit that's been going on that, you know, I feel like we should talk about, because I've been deep. I've been in the weeds, man. I've been doing conspiracy theories. We've been doing Wayfair, child trafficking. We've been doing all sorts of like wacky, nerdy shit. And there's a lot to talk about. And
you know what's funny? From a content perspective, I've been telling people that I watched the Shonda Rhimes masterclass. And she always says, like, West Wing was successful when times were turbulent in politics. It's a very uplifting show. And Scandal was successful in the era of Obama and hope and change. And everybody was feeling good because it's like the other side. So you always go the opposite. Right now is like the darkest, most trying times in like our lifetime, at least. And we're just leaning all the way into that instead of like, let's find something uplifting. Let's be like, oh, all right, there's coronavirus, but also sex trafficking. Well, so I'm like, maybe we could find a little balance, but we can lean into it, but maybe we could find some balance too.
I think it helps. It's like, well, I'm not going to complain about coronavirus every day. I haven't been kidnapped by Wayfair.
Right. And then you just feel good to go back to the plague. You're like, it's just a plague. All right, that's fine.
Whoa, no big deal. We've been churning out these 1 Minute Man videos, which is, I would imagine a lot of the Mail Time listeners are also 1 Minute Man viewers. And I mean, that shit is a fucking monster. So as we talk about, you know, like I said, it's kind of an update professionally. We've been throwing shit against the wall for 11 years now, and some of it hits. You know, podcasting was a hit, although never like a monster success like some of the other shows. The idea of podcasting was one that worked, and we've tried a bunch of other video products and audio products along the way. Some work, some don't, and I think 1 Minute Man, you can safely say, is our next success story. If you look at the Barstool Instagram, the videos that me and Brent have been putting out every day, I mean, I think it's one of the top video products in all of Barstool, up there with Answer the Internet and Pizza Reviews.
Yeah, we got an email that said it was like 6 of the top 7 in reach. And I don't really know how reach is measured, but whatever. There's a category called reach.
It's for anybody who's kind of nerdy into the social media side of things. Our guys are always talking about the comments. You know, most people think of how many views did your video get. And the guys who run the social media pages are always saying the goal is comments, because you get engagement, you get people tagging their friends, and that's how you gain more followers. And that's what perpetuates more views, as opposed to just if you have a one-off video that gets a ton of views, but nobody finds the page, nobody follows the page, it's not going to grow the next time. You know what I mean? So it makes sense, but it's just a funny thing. You have to shift your mind where it's like, it's almost like in baseball where batting average isn't what it used to be. You know, it used to be like, oh, my bat's 300. Now it's like, who fucking cares? What's his on-base percentage? What's his OPS, you know? So comments is like the name of the game, and driving.
I still look at views. I like that milli mark. When it hits a million, I mean, they almost all hit a million now. But now we're trying to do a million in under an hour.
A million in an hour. That's the goal. A million hour is our benchmark. And, you know, it's always a fine line between like, somebody said like, oh, okay, so you're the king of clickbait. Kind of like, yeah, bro. You goddamn right. Let's get those fucking clicks, man. And I know,
but I'm like,
clickbait is, you know, you're churning out shitty content that you just trick people into clicking. I just happen to think it's good content that I am getting you to click on.
And but it's like, I think of clickbait as just like when they were like, you know, 10 reasons why, you know, yeah, Meghan Markle and Harry are getting divorced or something like that. And then it's just like a summary of things that have happened. Barstool has always been, you guys are going to write about like, yeah, you might write about Meghan Markle or, you know, whatever's going on, but you add your take to it.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, I mean, like, we're going to talk about the things that are fucking popular, but it's going to be the Barstool version and the KFC version. Like, and now it's just on video because everybody is doing like scrolling through Instagram. They're not reading as blogs as much.
Well, that's why I'm happy to do it. You know, another thing we always try to do is, along with throwing shit against the wall, is we're always trying to be ahead of the curve. And in speaking to like the social media guys, we kind of got wind that, you know, the wave of the future is a lot more original content, because as social media platforms, you're already seeing it with regulation and Zuckerberg's and the Facebook and the politics and the Cambridge Academy and the this and the that. Basically, everything is cracking down. And I think, you know, the only thing that you can for sure count on your social media platforms is original content. So as one of the guys who's been out here for a while, who can quickly churn out a video and you can turn it around on the back end, we're really like utilizing that platform. And I think it's something that, you know, as time goes on, you'll see a lot more people doing it. People at Barstool, people outside of Barstool, just trying to make those original video type content. And I'm happy to be like ahead of it right now. Boy, do I not have many friends in the Instagram community. I'm at the point where I'm so, you know, I live in the mud. I live in the fucking in rock bottom in the depths of hell. So there's just no amount of internet hate that can get to me. But I am interested in it. I can look at it now without it affecting me. So right, I can look, and man, the fucking people on the Barstool Sports Instagram account who are not like Barstool fans. They don't know the blog. They don't know the history. They don't know who I am. They just fucking hate, and they hate hard. I mean, as a hater, I'm like, respect, game recognized.
Are they meaner than like the Barstool comment section?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's up there, right?
I always said that Instagram was like the nicest kind of like Twitter. You'll get like a lot of just trolls, you know?
Right.
And Instagram was always kind of just like, hey, I'm here to look at like pretty girls and funny videos. And like, what's up, man? How you doing? I'll follow you, whatever. No big deal. And then I got, that was like my personal account. I got into the Barstool world where I don't know what the difference is. I don't know if these people think of it as like their own comment section or they're trying to get their jokes off. But motherfuckers, hey, your boy KFC on the Barstool Sports Instagram. I mean, sometimes I get it like, I know who I am. I know I'm very polarizing. I know that I talk that talk and I piss people off because I'm polarizing. But sometimes like I'll just put out a video on there that's just like, here's a summary of events of something that's interesting that happened. And people are just like, fuck you. Fuck you, man. Fuck you. Die in a fire. I'm like, whoa. I was just telling you like what happened in the bubble today. What the fuck, man? They do not like your boy.
My favorite is when they're like, this guy's not fired yet. Like they think that you were just like hired as a host of 1 Minute Man. And then every now and then somebody in the comments will be like, he has equity in the company, so he's not going anywhere. I saw that today. And then that other person followed up with, oh, wow, that sucks. Like he didn't know. And now he knows. And he's like, I don't know if he'll keep saying that. Like, I wonder, not that it's like, you know, I mean, anything could happen. I'm sure you could find a way to get fired, but you haven't in 11 years. Well, yeah, they're into it for the long haul.
They don't know exactly who I am, which is why they're like, oh man, you know, this guy wants to be Dave. And I'm like, oh, I hate Dave. I love Dave. So no. Do I want to be Dave because I want $100 million? Sure. But yeah, so listen, anyway, long story short, my point is that we're trying to do a lot of new shit. We'll talk about some true crime stuff with Jared, like new stuff that we have on the horizon there. We got the video product with Instagram popping off. Very big Answer the Internet news coming soon at some point this summer that I've been working on. And mail time, we can kind of get back to being the weirdos that we are. And that today comes in the form of super intelligence. Super intelligence is some grade A nerd shit that I don't even quite know still what it is. What the fuck is super?
So you know, you probably understand it, but I never heard it coined as this term. So I was listening to Impulsive, mm-hmm. Logan Paul and your boy Mike talking to Carl Lentz. It actually came up in the Carl Lentz episode, which I think we should also do an episode on modern religion. And like, I hear you and Casey talk to it.
I saw some of the clips with Impulsive where Carl Lentz is very smart about this. Carl Lentz, not only is he like, obviously a passionate man of God, but he is a debater. That's what he is at this point. He knows he's a professional arguer and like he gives speeches and you could tell their interview was very similar to when me and Dave talked to him on Barstool Radio a couple of years ago, where we come in like ready to be skeptical and we're ready to be like, what about this? And what about that? And he's just kind of like, I just believe in like having a personal relationship with God and being a good person. And everyone's like,
Yeah. I think
what about these like horrible things? And he's like, I don't participate in any of that. It's like, well, yeah. Okay, shit.
Yeah. I think when we dive into it, I think I know the answer to this because Logan kind of asked him. But the weird part is he calls it a faith step where he's just like, you do have to like, you know, he's very practical. But then he is like, I do believe the Bible like was written by God. And then you're like, wait, what? And then but he always has it. But anyway, so in that. I think Mike was just like reading about superintelligence because he kind of just like wedges it in there. And he's like, what do you think about that? What do you think about the superintelligence community? And Carl Lentz is like, what? I don't know. I don't know about that. It has nothing to do with religion. So anyway, superintelligence, though, is the idea. And this is how they talked about it. So I haven't really got a chance to do the research yet. But it's that they are developing artificial intelligence that is like learning how to learn and teaching itself things. And they say the super interesting part was they say they have to keep it sandboxed, which is like it has to just be separate from everything else. Like it can't be connected to the internet, and it can't, like, people are not allowed to bring their phones into the room when they work on it. So I don't know if there's just one singular super intelligence. Elon Musk talked about it on Joe Rogan. He was like, I'm trying to tell him to slow it down because it's not going to be good. And it's like, if it can get out, remember, I think they said Facebook was working on something and it started writing its own language. And they were like, oh, they pulled the plug. So this is going on somewhere. And just like immediately what popped into my mind was like the script of a TV show where this is going on. And it basically mimics coronavirus. Like it gets out. And it gets onto the internet and it can do whatever it wants, including like shutting down or like dissolving all currency, you know, like,
right.
Whether it's Bitcoin or regular, it's just like all the data can be destroyed or not. It can build what it wants. You know, in the show, I'm writing in my head, like suddenly Amazon trucks are all being rerouted to like one city and it's bringing itself supplies. Like maybe it's set in the future where like the self-driving cars and everything's like moving. But anyway, it's like, you know, it's basically artificial intelligence, that next step that'll take you to like Cyberdyne and Skynet of the Terminator and like where it all
sounds like this sounds like we're going to need to send someone back in time to stop the super intelligence from ever being created. It's literally Pandora's box. Like there's call it a sandbox, you call it a computer. There's some sort of, you know, machinery that is, we've created it and it's going to ruin the world.
So now I'm like, okay, but what would be like the optimistic version of this? It's weird because it basically is like, it will supplant us as the like apex, not predator, but like, but maybe predator, you know, like, you know, it'll be like the highest form of intelligence. But I was like, well, what's the optimistic version of that? Because it's just like, why would it need to kill us? That's, you know, every science fiction, like, you know, movie or whatever, like they need a conflict. So they're like, okay, the robots want to kill us. But it's like, we're not, as humans, like great about things, but we don't kill just to kill. I mean, small pockets of us do, but it's like we kill to eat. Are the robots going to need to eat us? That doesn't make any sense.
No, but
we kill to acquire resources. What would it need to do that for? You know,
keep
cows around. We don't just exterminate them. We kill.
Yeah. But I think that we're ruining the planet. I think that the robots need a place to live.
But I just don't know if they need to get rid of us for that.
Why would you want to get rid of
humans? You know, I mean, everybody just wants to write that script where it's like, then they kill us. I mean, one, they might like take us over. But again, I don't even know if they get in the way.
People is very emotional, you know? Like throughout history, it's either been, you know, slavery or a Holocaust or something, because it's like a personal warped vendetta against a certain group of people. And it's like you would think, arguably, if this is going to be some sort of artificial intelligence that wouldn't have any sort of prejudice, it would just be like, we see black and white, we see zero and one, we don't, you know.
I could certainly see them seeing us as like unnecessary, but I don't know if they would need to exterminate us. I think that they might. Did you ever see the movie Her?
No, I know of it, but I never saw it.
So her is like, you know, he basically has a Bluetooth, but it's like a companion, and he falls in love with the artificial intelligence. But then all of the personal artificial intelligences connect to each other. They basically become a super intelligence. And at the end, spoiler alert, if you want to watch this very old movie now, they just leave. They go, we're done with you. And we're like going to a higher plane or whatever. Mm-hmm. So again, in the script of my movie, in the way that this movie ends that I'm pretending I'm ever going to write is that the super intelligence confirms that, and this will lead to another like nerdy thing that we need to do a topic on, confirms that there is nothing outside of Earth, that they just like search the whole universe somehow and they destroy themselves because they go, well, this is pointless. Like, what's the point of like attempting to reach like a higher plane? So anyway, I'm just saying like, it certainly would be, I think it would be bad for us because it would be like, we're not in charge of the planet anymore. But at the same time, I'm like, what if they just don't want to kill us?
That's like the hubris. It's like, first of all, we think that nobody can be higher than us. And super intelligence and quantum supremacy are proving that we're not the highest level. And then also the arrogance that like, once we are surpassed, that we would have to be exterminated or something.
Yeah. Like, I think that they'll shoot past us.
You're not smarter than us. But we also don't think of you as a threat. We don't care. Right. You're nothing. You're a nobody. That's right. Really hard for humans to wrap their head around because we think we're important. Yeah. It's like,
again, we are the supreme intelligence right now. But we do not like just get rid of like we'll get rid of what is in our way. And like we are like terrible to certain groups of people, and like that has happened before. But if we're talking about something that is like beyond us and evolved more than us, we would probably need to give them a reason. Now that we might give them that reason, and they might be like, we got to get rid of these people, they're in the way. But again, like we keep cows around and we only kill them to eat them. So unless they need to eat us,
which they don't,
wouldn't funny. They just keep us around?
What I always, that shower thought that fucked me up recently was the idea of like, we are the post-apocalyptic world after dinosaurs. That got real good.
Yeah,
that really blew my fucking mind. It was like there was a point they weren't as intelligent of a being, but dinosaurs were walking around being like, we run this fucking joint. And then they were gone and someone else ran it. And it's funny because it's an entirely different shape of a being. You know, these things were big, fat, four-legged monsters. And then we became these little tiny, dainty humans. And it's like, if that were to happen again, what could potentially be the next thing that inherits the Earth that would look entirely different or whatever it may be? And that really, like, that fucks me up good, man. I think about that, like, once a day where I'm just like, this is part two. And maybe there was something, maybe this is part three. Maybe this is part 100 for all we fucking know. And that, what also fucks me up is the super intelligence thing ties into quantum supremacy. Google announced like a month or so ago, 3 months ago at this point, that they achieved quantum supremacy, which is the idea of like, it's hard to even just kind of catch all. But they had a 54 qubit Sycamore processor, which I'm assuming a qubit is like the biggest fucking piece of technology, size of memory, whatever it is. Anyway, they had this computer that was able to perform a calculation in 200 seconds that would have taken the world's largest and most like powerful supercomputer 10,000 years to finish. What the fuck is that? And what blows my mind is, how did we create that?
Right.
Because technically we achieved that then.
Right.
You know, it's like we're the GM. We made this thing. Yeah, you won the championship, but like we made this computer that was able to achieve that. So I think we humans answered that question. But I guess that the whole thing is that it's not. It's like you set the ball rolling. And then this quantum supremacy, super intelligence, artificial being, they answered it.
Right.
That's what's scary. That is where I absolutely check out. I was watching the show Dark. And you got to watch that. I don't know if you're not in the right period of life because you have to watch it and you're going to have kids and wives and shit bothering you. You have to be like single and alone to do that. You have to be a lonely motherfucker to watch Dark.
It's a good name.
It's three seasons, 8 episodes. It's only 24 total episodes. And it's like the most dense, deep, hard subject matter ever. And there's like levels of time travel that I just didn't even think were possible. You know what? You know, there's always these rules in time travel with Back to the Future and Endgame. It's like you can't do this, you can't do that. Out the goddamn window. You got people giving birth to themselves. You got people like going back in time and murdering their kids. You got people bridging, you know, a person from this time has sex with a person from this time, and now their baby is actually of both times. Like wild shit that these guys were just like, no, there are no rules. Like we had these things that were considered canon when it comes to time travel, and we just like threw that out the window.
You know, how do they handle it then? Like, does it affect the future or does it not? Because that's how Endgame was just like, nah, that doesn't happen.
It affects everything. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to even do without spoilers, but like, as long as your future self still exists, like there are scenes where a guy pulls a trigger and the gun just doesn't go off. And it's just like, the world will not let you kill this person because your future self already exists. So you can't die now because in this, you know, in this like timeline, this is already happening. So you're locked in basically.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
So there's a lot of cool shit like that. Like, you can die, but you can also cease to exist. So those are like two different things. And there's like four different variations of characters in different times. And anyway, my very long-winded point is my brain just shut off towards the end. Like, first two and a half seasons, I was good. Episodes 1 through 20, I could kind of hold on for dear life. Episodes 20 through 24, my brain just couldn't handle it. And I was like rewinding and watching and reading. And it was just like, my brain can't do this. It was like looking at fucking Russian, reading Chinese. I just like couldn't do it.
And that was like Westworld for me eventually. I was like, I can't. I like it, but I can't.
The difference with Westworld is I was like, this is bad. This is badly written. It's confusing, but it's also just stupid. Whereas Dark, I was like, I know that these guys are writing their asses off. And they, this is my problem, not theirs, you know? And I feel like that's where I'm at with quantum supremacy and super intelligence. It's like, I have found my limit of human understanding. Yeah. I just can't wrap my head around like a computer program that thinks for itself and grows outside of what we are capable of. Like, how? And, you know, they try to put these fail safes in and stuff, and it just, they blow right past it. It doesn't, it can jump out of the sandbox and infect the world, and, you know, we can't stop it. Have you read the Chinese Room thing?
I don't think so.
So the idea with the quantum supremacy and super intelligence is that somebody a long time ago, and I think it's kind of like a cold takes exposed sort of thing. In like 1980, they said that regardless of how intelligent a computer can get, they don't have a mind. They're not actually a mind as we know. And I think the argument is kind of like, well, what's a mind? You know, like our mind is, we take in certain stimuli and certain bits of information, we process it, we put it all together, and we spit out like our thoughts, right? Kind of like what a computer is doing. You have inputs and you have outputs, you know? I type some shit, I put some numbers in, the computer does its thing, puts out a picture or a, you know, that's a mind, no?
Right.
And so the idea with the Chinese Room was like, if you put me in a room and you show me Chinese symbols, and I just have access to dictionaries, I guess, to all the Chinese symbols, and I have enough time to sit there and be like, okay, this symbol means this, this symbol means that, and I'm going to respond with this symbol. I'm like talking, but I don't know Chinese, was kind of like this doctor's idea. Like, I have all the tools to have this conversation, but I do not understand Chinese. And that's kind of what a computer is doing. It's just like, it's using this, it has access to that, it's giving you the sentence, but it doesn't know Chinese. But I would kind of argue, like, well, what does know mean? What does understand? What is memorizing versus, you know, comprehending? You know, what is all that really? And it's, I think Rogan and Duncan Trussell had this conversation when Google announced quantum supremacy, which, by the way, Google announced quantum supremacy and IBM was like, we did it too. We did it too. And like ours took longer, but Google's wasn't real. They didn't talk about like how much you needed to store before, you know, all these like computer like semantics or whatever. But I think Joe and Duncan were kind of arguing that like, you know, what's a mind? What's a brain? Why is hardwired computer shit not the same as like our soft tissue? Fuck's the difference, you know? If it maybe yours is electronic and ours is flesh and blood, but like it's all the same shit, really, you know?
Right. Just because it's not, it's like you would have to define human comprehension and human action. It's like we're not that great at communicating with each other. Like, look at like, you know, just like divisive politics nowadays. Like, two people with the exact same computers, you know, the exact same hardware, will sit down and just not be able to. I mean, yes, they can communicate, but you know, like they don't agree on certain things either. Yeah. You know, so it's like when a computer spits out something.
I think one of the arguments I can imagine people making is that, you know, like, human mind is capable of like love and empathy and things that are more like quote unquote emotional. And it's like, I don't know, man, some of us are, but you look around at the rest of us, I bet you a computer doing it in black and white. Like, look at fucking Star Trek, to go full nerd here on KFP on mail time. Like, Data on Star Trek, he was like the nicest, best thing on that show. There was never any jealousy. There was never any rage. There was never any of that. And even like love and emotion, he could be like, well, you know, you're being nice to me, so in return, I should be nice to you. And not because I feel love, because like X's and O's, black and white.
Yeah. At one point he got the emotion chip and he took it out. He's like,
yeah, it's crazy. Emotion ruins everything. Emotion is what gets you to, I mean, you hear about crimes of passion, and you have people who with their vices who are addicted to this and fall short for that and all that shit. It's like, that's all the bad part is the emotion, you know? So you can make the argument that, you know, these computers and these artificial intelligence is far superior, not just because of their ability to like do a computation in 200 seconds versus 10,000 years, but because they're not going to be clouded by like, you know, jealousy and greed and all that kind of shit, you know? So, I mean, we'll dig in deeper to that, because like I said, my brain kind of checks out and I'll actually have to do some like homework on like trying to figure out what these things are. But we can get back into some of those mail time topics once we settle everything with the true crime world. We're going to bring in the rocket now, because not only do we got to talk about it a little bit, but we got to take care of some business and explain to you what our plans for the future are regarding the crime dogs. So let's bring in Rocket now, courtesy of Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is they're loyal to us. They've been around with us for a little while now, buying ads on all of our shows. And they're loyal to you, the consumer, by coming up with the Mack Weldon loyalty program, which this shit is the real deal. If you like sweatpants, sweatshirts, t-shirts, you know, there's a lot of companies out there right now, the wave of athleisure wear and all that shit. It gives you a lot of choices. And I think Mack Weldon knows that. So they're out here trying to incentivize you to stick with them, and for good reason. Number one, their clothes are quality. I'm wearing the Mack Weldon sweatpants right now. They've got like the joggers that are kind of like they don't look like, you know, sweatpants you're wearing at the gym. And you can wear them out to the office. You can wear them out on a date. You can wear them out to the bar. They're just kind of like pants. I said this on mixtape the other day. I think we're in the world now, the era of just pants, you know? It used to be like you wear jeans to play, you wear slacks to work, you wear sweatpants at home. And we kind of just combined all of those things into like a new material that fits in a certain way that matches with all sorts of clothes. And you can just wear pants now. And so that's where Mack Weldon's at. It's comfortable like sweatpants. It's stylish like your jeans. And it's proper enough, like your work clothes, that you can wear them in basically any given setting. So that's the first reason to differentiate Mack Weldon from the rest of the companies. The second one is the loyalty program they set up. This shit's unbelievable. The Mack Weldon Blue program is you get 20% off after you spend $200. So the first level, you buy anything from Mack Weldon, you get free shipping automatically. After that, once you spend $200, you get 20% off every single time you order anything for the next year. So, you know, why buy sweatpants and sweatshirts and t-shirts and socks and boxers from this one company? Because they're going to give you 20% off every single goddamn time. So that's the reason why you stick with Mack Weldon. That blue program is going to make sure they hook you up. You go to right now, you can, without even doing the loyalty program, you can get 20% off your first order when you go to MackWeldon.com/mailtime and then enter the promo code mailtime at checkout. Get yourself a pair of boxers right now. They have the first pair. If you don't like it, you can keep it and they'll send you your money back, but you're going to like those boxers. They got the everyday wear boxer briefs that are quality, the socks, the pants, the t-shirts, the loungewear, all of it at MackWeldon.com. Make sure you get to that level two by spending $200 and get 20% off every time. But right now, go to MackWeldon.com/mailtime, promo code mailtime. All right, we brought in the Rocket. The Rocket's back to do a little crime dogs. Now, it's been – we started this out because of I'll Be Gone in the Dark, and then all of a sudden the Alyssa Turney case falls into our lap, and Outcry is the new true crime hit on Showtime. And not that true crime hasn't, you know, true crime has been around and bubbling for a while, but it seems like as soon as
you can't stop saying bubble, huh?
The bubble, baby.
You can't stop.
The bubble. I love the word the bubble. But it sounds like, you know, me and Rocket started doing this thing. And next thing you know, true crime spikes and the fans seem to like it. And I think what started out as just a segment of Mail Time is going to spin off into its own podcast because
we got an itch that we can't scratch, Kevin.
Absolutely. And I mean, I got part of Mail Time was I always wanted to talk about nerdy shit and other stuff that I'm not talking about on KFC Radio, and true crime fell into that in that category. But also I got some other shit I want to get back to with Mail Time. I want to keep doing the true crime with Rocket. We might as well just split it off. And hey, what's another fucking podcast to add to the
and
to
some
the resume?
Fire artwork too. Yeah. Shout out to Trig, who just, he was like, what are you looking for? And I was like, me and Kevin make it like Sherlock Holmesy, but like Barstool. And he's like, I got you.
Honestly, the artwork is what made me be like, okay, well, we're doing a new podcast.
Yeah.
Like, it was a funny name. It's a funny segment. It's a good time. Oh, wait a minute. We got some dope artwork and a good logo. Well, now it's a whole new job. It's a whole new operation.
Right. Yeah. The artwork really got me gassed up.
So we'll talk about, we'll do a few more Mail Time episodes here, but then I think the idea is to spin off Crime Dogs into kind of a podcast special where it's more of a season one, season two sort of thing, as opposed to just 52 weeks a year. We'll pick some cases. We'll do some podcasting. We'll do some video content. We'll make it a little more polished, a little more prepared than we usually do. And we'll basically tackle the true crime wave the way that we always do it. You know, that's how Barstool was built. We talk about sports, but we do it in a Barstool manner. And we talk about politics, we do that in a Barstool manner. Everything is already kind of an established genre. We just do it with our, you know, whether we're being a little more flagrant about it, whether we're just shooting from the hip, talking that shit. So, you know, plenty of cases to talk about, plenty old ones, new ones, classic ones, things you have heard, things you haven't heard, and me and Rocket are going to do it crime dog style. So what we want to do is listen to the fans and find out what cases you guys want to hear about. You know, we could tackle some of the classics, but also if there's new ones, if there's ones that, you know, haven't been covered by the My Favorite Murders of the World.
Right.
And
yeah, come for the classics, stay for the YouTube wormholes. Like that's what I'm all about. Like I feel like a lot of people are going to want, because the classics that are still cold cases, there's a million theories out there. And I know that Kevin is going to be someone that has the most outlandish, wild theories of all, but I think that there's also going to be
theories, sir. Correct.
They're going to be wild and outlandish. And I think there's going to be, because of the internet, there's so many different fucking wormholes that you can go down where there's just like these missing persons cases and these all these different unsolved cases that are not, or never have gotten mainstream attention, where why not take a deep dive into those?
Right. And I mean, it's something, much like the Mets, like I was like, I talk about the Mets all the time. I might as well press record and have a podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm always digging into true crime and reading Wikipedia pages and watching documentaries. I mean, the Outcry on Showtime, we'll do like some official talk on that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get some of the people from that documentary on the show. That shit is wild. No one saw it coming. Is the one about Skidmore, Missouri, where they murdered a rapist vigilante style, and then the town just gets decimated by crime and murder. It's dark as fuck. And these are ones that I just... One.
It's like, if you have an Amazon Prime subscription, you still have to pay for it? Is that correct?
Yeah, I paid like $2.99 to sign up for like Sundance TV or something, and I'm going to watch that and then just cancel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. My point being that there are...
You'll pay $6 for a coffee, and then it's like $3 to watch a series, and you're like,
nah, I can't do it.
I don't know.
But there's so many different channels, outlets, documentaries, cases that, you know, you might not even know about. And so to the Barstool audience that overlaps with the true crime audience, let us know. I know it's a lot of the chicks out there. Girls are just obsessed.
They love it.
Rape and murder. It's absolutely crazy.
They love it.
So I mean, if you're
everyone that I talk to, it's like they'll be like, you know, three girls in the room, two guys, and it's like, yeah, I think me and Kevin are thinking of doing a true crime podcast. And the girls, really? Oh my god! Like I have all these cases, and I can like tell you about them. Like I listen to this podcast, that podcast, and I watch this documentary. But have you seen this Netflix series? And then also this YouTube channel. And it's like Jesus Christ.
And they're like you know, happy bubbly girls, and they're like, he raped 33 women, and then he killed a child, and he buried it, and had an alligator eat them alive, and like, like, no big deal. So, if you're one of the Section 10 ladies, if you're a KFC radio listener, and you got guy or girl, but it just tends to always be chicks, and you got cases that you want us to tackle.
Well, that was another one. It was I literally, because we're Bryn. If you're familiar with Section 10, Bryn is going to produce the Crime Dogs, and I called her and I was like, "Hey, me and Kevin have this idea. We're going to do a true crime podcast." And she was like, "Oh my god, I'm with my sister right now. We're listening to a true crime podcast right now." Yeah,
it's so nuts. It's like she's got a passion for it. So let us know. We'll do, you know, maybe like 10 episodes a season. And like I said, we'll hopefully polish it up and do it right. So get at us if you're interested in being a part of Crime Dog Nation. It's, you know, if you got tips.
I can't wait to wear the merch. That merch. You know what? Every single time that we record a fucking podcast, I'm going to wear a dog collar. Done deal.
I'm gonna sell a Crime Dogs magnifying glass. I'm just gonna sit there looking at the screen.
Crime Dogs trench coats and magnifying glasses coming in hot for Black Friday.
Yo, I will legit make a trench coat. I will make a trench coat, guaranteed.
Yeah, like if there's gonna be a video component to this, we were talking about maybe doing like an after show where once we release a podcast and we talk about a particular case, where we would do a video component at HQ where we kind of dissect the case, we take calls from people, and then I'm willing to do those videos in a full trench coat, in a dog collar.
Maybe nothing on underneath. Maybe just a collar and a trench.
Definitely not anything underneath.
Now, the reason why this all kind of materialized into much more than just a segment is because of the Alyssa Turney missing persons case. Voices for Justice is the podcast. Justice for Alyssa is the hashtag. And it's a true crime case that it's the first time I've ever been pseudo involved in one as it's unfolding. I usually catch these things by the time it's reached Netflix and it's already a worldwide phenomenon. This one, it's intriguing and interesting because we're talking today to Sarah Turney, who is basically the Sarah Koenig of this case. She's the one who is, you know, banging on the doors, calling up the cops, raising awareness, and trying to solve this case. She's our Michelle McNamara. And we talked to her today, and this case is a wild one, man. I mean, when you talk about the true crime successes, it's always, you know, a grisly, gruesome story, but it's the one that always has the, when the police work is shoddy and when the justice system seems to be corrupt and you kind of go, wait, what the fuck is going on here? Mm-hmm. And this case has that in spades.
Yeah. And like, not even like a, like you talk about like having like a smoking gun in the case. There's, this one is one of those things where it's like, it's not a smoking gun. It's more of like a sizzling gun where it's like, there's enough to be like, well, yeah, it's him. But like, you can't say definitively that it's him.
Which is why, you know, police work and the justice system is wild, because it's like common sense is telling everybody this, but you need the evidence, you need, and the person of interest in this case, the suspect, is a former cop. So he probably knows exactly what the standard of evidence is and knows exactly what to do and not to do. And so we got this case with a missing girl, missing since the early 2000s. And her stepsister is the one leading the charge, saying, my father, my biological father, is a fucking murderer. Mm-hmm. And we need to do something about it. And we talked to her for like an hour. And that's the interview you're about to hear here. It's fascinating stuff. And I say that I'm walking on eggshells the whole interview. And I say as much at the top, because it's very awkward to like, it's, you know, usually I'm interviewing someone about their new TV show or sports. And in this case, I'm talking about, you know, her dead sister and how there's
and her father being a murderer.
Right. Her father, you know, I it's like, am I allowed to say that your father is a fucking scumbag? Because he's a murderer, but I don't, it's still your father. I don't know what to say and do. And she's very gracious the whole time. And she knows it's a strange set of circumstances. But if you've been listening to the show recently, you know that she went on TikTok and started putting out videos of home video footage, where the father's being very creepy. The sister is being very suspect.
Sister calls him a pervert in the video.
Sarah, dad's a pervert. In another video, he's creepily filming her in the pool and she's doing some sort of hand signal that a lot of people have interpreted as her saying, like, make him go away, make him stop. They found hundreds of hours of footage of secret cameras of him filming her at work. And as the story goes, he picked her up from school early one day. She had told her friends, I'll see you later at the party tonight. And she was just never seen again. The father ends up going to jail after the police investigate the home and they find pipe bombs and a manifesto and all sorts of ranting and wild behavior talking about these other guys.
Well, he was going to bomb a union. And then he later tried to say that the union was responsible for her disappearance or her murder. Like, he was calling it like in a murder when she was still just missing. It's like, yeah, they murdered her. It's like, well, how do you know that she's dead?
She was murdered yet, dude. And so as they investigated him from the pipe bombing, they found all of these videos and he went to jail for the pipe bomb situation. The police told Sarah that they would be trying him for these crimes as soon as he got out of prison because they didn't want to combine the sentences. And lo and behold, 2 days before this former cop is out of prison, the detectives who were on the case get reassigned and this whole thing just falls through the cracks. And she is now on a crusade to try to drum up awareness, to talk to the DA's office. She now got the FBI involved and is just doing whatever she possibly can to get the police to follow through on what they promised her. And so far, they're either blatantly lying to her or they're falling back on like bureaucratic red tape to be like, sorry, we can't get this done. And our girl, Sarah, is like, well, we'll see what happens when this is on Netflix, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no better time in human history to have, I mean, it's obviously incredibly unfortunate to be in her position, but there's no better time to be in her position with the motivation that she has, knowing that you have TikTok at your disposal. It's like, I just throw a video out there and now I got a million subscribers. Yeah. Now I got like Showtime, HBO, Netflix. They all want to make a special about this. And like before, it's like law enforcement can just be like, hey, sorry, you're shit out of luck, dude. Like there's nothing you can do about this. And, and then you just have to bow down. It's like, well, fuck, like what am I supposed to do? Like picket in the middle of the street? Like no one's going to give a fuck. They're just going to keep driving. Now you put it on social media, you get the attention of everybody. And there becomes this groundswell for justice that law enforcement cannot deny. Like, right. These are like appointed people, like all like the DA and all those people. It's like, well, if you don't do something about this, everyone looks bad. Right. Everyone looks bad. And we saw that in outcry. Like, one of the people at the end, they were like, yeah, by the way, she committed suicide. It's like,
no. Yeah,
that, I did not see that coming.
In there, it's like, yeah, I'm responsible for a lot of wrong shit. And next thing you know, the guilt adds up. Nobody wins here. So why don't we just do this the right way? And I think Sarah says as much, that one of the DAs in this case is up for reelection in this fall or this winter. And like, you know, it would behoove you to start fucking paying attention right now.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe, and I'm pretty pumped about it, because I hope it's something that kind of rewards our listeners here. I think this will be turned into a Netflix, Amazon Prime, four or five part documentary, because it's one of those weird. I mean,
she's Garrett Cole right now. It's like, who wants to sign me? Like, I'm the top free agent in true crime. Like, true crime is the top podcast genre, and she has probably the most viral true crime case that's active that could actually lead to an arrest or a conviction. Yeah. Like, the end of her story or this story hasn't been written yet. So you could have a Netflix or an Amazon or a Showtime come in and you document it from this point forward, and then still you'd be able to get the end of the story documented live.
Yeah, when, you know, episode 8 or 9 or 10 is like, hey, updated episode here, we got them. I genuinely believe, I think two things. I think Britney Spears will be freed of her conservatorship sooner than later. And I do believe that Michael Turney will at least be, you know, can I guarantee that he gets thrown in jail? I don't know. But I do believe he'll be arrested for this and there will be some sort of trial, because Sarah sounds like the type who just will not be denied. You'll hear it in this interview. She's well-spoken. She's articulate. She's hungry. She's motivated. She's good at this. She has a background in planning like events and parties. So when she organizes rallies and protests and whatnot, like, she knows what the fuck she's doing. And some of the highlights from this interview, there's a, you know, we mentioned the TikTok videos, which go viral, which are, you know, when you see home footage, it's always very eerie. And it's like a first hand account that you can see for yourself. The testimonials from her and the rest of her family, like, everyone in her family is like, this fucking guy did it. There's stories, all circumstantial and hearsay, but they all have stories about him drugging people, touching people, assaulting them. There's one part of the interview you'll hear, the Dr. Doolittle tapes, where this tape, this VHS was labeled as the movie Dr. Doolittle, and you pop it in and it's actually home footage from Michael Turney of a girl naked from
two girls.
And one is believed to be Alyssa. Their faces are covered with newspaper, though, so you can't be sure. Laying on a couch, naked from the waist down, newspaper over the face, not moving. And he's just got home footage of these girls. And it's like, they don't have the tape and it hasn't been like submitted and they haven't capitalized on it, but it's like, it's real. And we all saw it and we all know who did it and nobody's fucking doing anything about it. It's like, I hope that eventually somebody takes action on these things, because it's fucking terrifying, man.
Yeah. It's crazy. And like, I hope that it's not like the case that we were talking about before, where it's like, well, he's in prison, what do you want? Like, it's like, we want justice. Like, we want to know what happened.
Right.
And just because he's in prison for something else doesn't mean that, I mean, he's going to get out of, he's out of jail.
He's out of jail.
It's like, just because he served time for something else doesn't mean like, we'll just, you know, we'll bag it up all together and we'll call a spade a spade. Like, no, this motherfucker should be in prison for the rest of his life if he did this.
And that's the main thing. You'll hear it in the interview. We're about to run it now. Sarah's like, this dude is free. He's around the corner and he's going to do this shit again. And it's because everyone's dragging their feet and not, you know, going after this guy for whatever reason. You can listen to her podcast, Voices for Justice, and you can listen to her interview today. Decide for yourself whether it's law enforcement blatantly lying versus just dragging their feet because they're lazy. And you can form your own opinion. But honestly, there's only one logical conclusion here, and that's that Michael Turney is a lying sack of shit fucking murderers. All right, Rocket, so let's get into it. Sarah Turney is here, courtesy of Manscaped. Now, if you you got a big date coming up,
you're going to be, you know, maybe at the beach and you got to pop your top off. Anytime you are maybe a little bit insecure and you got to make sure that you're going to look and feel and smell and be at your top notch, that's where Manscaped comes in. Not only do they have all the equipment to make sure you can trim your body hair and do your manscaping and trimming, they also have the Shears 2.0 kit to clip your nails. I don't know if people know this about me, but your boy KFC is full-blown OCD about his nails. I used to be a big-time nail biter, and now I clip my nails, I don't know, like three times a day. I just sit there, and if I see the littlest bit of hangnail, it's gone. I make sure if there's a little bit of white on my nails, it's gone. I'm talking cuticle cutting. I'm talking nail trimming, buffing, all the whole nine. So my nails are always on point, okay? So then they got the manscaping. They got the shears. Then they've got, once you trim yourself, they've got ball deodorant. They've got the crop preserver. They've got all sorts of – they got the testy toner, which is a little – gives you a little pep in your step with these moisturizers and these lotions that keep your skin soft and make you smell good and, you know, maybe give you a little tingle, keep a little cooling sensation. And then after you've done all that, they've got the Manscaped boxer briefs, which are high performance briefs that reduce chafing. So after you do all that work, you don't want to erase it and put on some, you know, cheap ass boxers. They got you covered from front to finish, from the razor all the way down to the clothes. Manscaped is taking care of you so that you are a modern man in the modern world with a modern set of balls. Go to manscaped.com, use the promo code MAILTIME and get 20% off plus free shipping. That's manscaped.com, promo code MAILTIME. Summer is here, so it's time to manscape. Sarah Turney, let's learn about a crazy true crime case. All right, another episode of Crime Dogs here. We got a very special guest. Sarah Turney's on the show. Sarah has started this unbelievable viral marketing campaign, whatever you want to call it, to try to raise awareness to get justice for her sister, Alyssa, who has tragically been missing for almost 20 years now. If you've been listening to the episode recently, we've kind of set the scene, but I'm sure we've kind of been getting things wrong and not doing everything justice. So we wanted to bring Sarah in here so she could tell it in her own words. So thank you so much for joining. We are, it's weird. I don't want to say we're excited. And I even when I asked you to come on the show, I feel like I'm walking on eggshells and I don't know exactly how to handle it because it is a tragic situation, but the point of it is raising awareness and true crime is so popular. So I'm in a weird spot where I'm just not even quite sure how to handle it all. So I'll kind of let you run the show here.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for having me. Honestly, it's all about getting the word out. So I'm happy to be here.
Great. I got a chance to listen to the latest episode, and you did an unbelievable job with like having the phone calls recorded, which I think in like the true crime world is, I know as a viewer, that's what always grasps me when it's like direct interviews or you're hearing it from the police or for lawyers. I feel like that's why Serial blew up the way it did is like firsthand accounts. And so quickly to summarize, it sounds like the Phoenix Police Department is saying, we don't have enough evidence. And if we present it to the DA or whoever goes up the next chain of command, they will say there's not enough evidence. And then you've missed your one shot to ever get this person prosecuted. And that just sounds blatantly factually incorrect, right?
Yeah, it is incorrect. So I actually went to this county attorney's office and asked them that question. I said, do you have multiple chances? And they said, you know, I can't tell you specifically, but in most cases, yeah. What they do is, you know, they accept the evidence, they look at it, and they'll say, you know, we need a little bit more here or a little bit more there, come back to us. So you can present the case multiple times. So yeah, according to all of my sources, that is absolutely incorrect.
And I feel like you are leaning towards this is like blatant lying and deceit. And I was a little unsure, like, is it maybe just like the bureaucratic nature of law enforcement that we sitting at home, like that makes no sense. Of course you should be able to submit it multiple times, and evidence is always changing, but maybe we just don't know kind of the rules. Like the way that those two police officers on your call kind of kept reiterating, like, we just don't have enough evidence. And sometimes I'm wondering, maybe we actually don't know the ins and outs. So that makes a little more sense. But the vibe you're getting is that they're like intentionally trying to make this difficult for you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that opinion comes from professionals, because when I was in that meeting, I didn't really know what to think of it. And then, of course, I have this audio. I play it for professionals in the field, law enforcement, prosecutors, that type of thing that I've met through doing podcasts. And they all tell me the same thing. They're lying to you. And right. I think that it's really indicative that they were, because, you know, a week later, we get this bombshell with essentially, you know, no new evidence obtained, that they're ready to move forward. So yeah, I have to believe that that entire meeting was just to really make me shut up and go away. And I didn't. And I was really strong. And I literally said to them, good luck explaining this when it gets on Netflix.
That's so kind.
Yeah.
Sarah has a moment where she's like, okay, got it. I got, you know, millions of views on YouTube. I got 90,000 signatures on the petition. And it's going to be really interesting to see how you're portrayed when this gets to Netflix. So I was like,
all right,
coming in hot.
So that's what I'm curious about, because now, like, I was introduced to the case through TikTok. Like, that was the first time that I ever saw anything about it. But then after, like, searching on YouTube, like, there's been other specials done on it. There's been other high profile interviews done on it. Do you think that right now is the closest that you've gotten to sort of gaining mainstream attention, where it actually, you know, has the same ripple effect as some of these other documentaries that we've seen on Netflix actually get out there?
Absolutely. I spent years trying to get media attention. You know, the police set me on that mission. In 2017, they sat me down and said, we can't help you. You know, your best chance is to get media exposure. And I begged and I pleaded with mainstream media, and I was repeatedly ignored or told no, which, you know, happens. And I did a variety of podcasts and YouTube videos. And then I went to TikTok and it absolutely went insane. And that's when I started getting, you know, articles in Elle, articles in NBC News, the Daily Mail. People just started picking it up like crazy. So, yeah, I attribute all of that to TikTok.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy, because it's like, it's for like, you go on there and it's 16 to 21 year olds, and here me and Kevin are a couple of 30 year old dudes, and we see it. So the first time that I saw it, I thought, like, cause you know how there's all these different like video filters and everything to make things look like it's age. I was like, there's no way that's like authentic and that's real. And then Kevin's like, no, like, this is like the real deal. Like, this actually happened. Like, it's very, very, creepy the way that it unfolds. But for you, like, putting out that footage, how much do you have in the holster ready to kind of like put out there that we haven't seen yet?
I have a lot. I probably have at least 50 home videos that will have clips like that, that just indicate that there was something weird going on, that their relationship was possibly not normal. So I have a lot. But, you know, I do have to be careful and think about what I put out there and make sure that it is kind of the most dynamic, as opposed to something that would leave people feeling unsure and perhaps make them think that I'm just being malicious. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just put anything out there for shock value. I want to put, you know, the best things I have out there in hopes of, you know, generating leads for this case. But yeah, I mean, I have endless supply of video.
Mm-hmm. What the fuck? It's so weird that he was, I mean, so speak a little bit towards the, like, the family dynamic. I know you kind of, you explained on the latest episode of Voices for Justice, which is Sarah's podcast. You can download it now. You explained that you had to kind of be convinced that, you know, this is your father and somebody, and who was it, by the way, who like sat you down and was like, listen, we got to talk about, you know, your dad might not be who you think he is, or was this something you always kind of thought, like, were you and your father, did you have a normal relationship and then this like blew your mind, or was something kind of always off in the family?
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I do want to clear up is that Alyssa and I share the same mother who passed away, and then we have different fathers. So he is my biological father and Alyssa's stepfather, who adopted her when she was 2.5. When we were growing up, you know, we were treated completely differently. I was given so much freedom and Alyssa had almost none. And, you know, Alyssa's 4 years older than me. And starting in like fourth grade, you know, I was allowed to go to school when I wanted. I could eat whatever I wanted. I could go wherever I wanted at any time. I basically ran in the streets as a kid. And Alyssa had the complete opposite experience. You know, she was expected to go to school to get good grades, to come home and do her homework. And that only got worse as we got older. There was a lot of, you know, contention in the house. And the thing was, you know, I wasn't monitored like Alyssa was. There was a hidden camera inside of our living room vent that was there just to watch Alyssa. After she was gone, my dad took that down. But my father and I, we were super close. Our father had always said that he was going to give us away or run away. So when I was staying home from school, it was to spend time with him to make sure wouldn't do that.
Your father always said he was going to give you guys away?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He threatened to give us away all the time, or said that he was just going to run away because we were, you know, such horrible children, essentially. But what this did was create, you know, a trauma bond with him. So my father was my best friend. I would have never assumed that he did anything. You know, this was the guy that would, you know, pick me up if I was drunk at a party, that would come bring my friends gas. You know, I thought he was the cool dad. So when he was arrested in 2008, what happened was I was the point person on Alyssa's case, which means they called me and said, "We have news about your sister." The police did. "Come down to the station and we'll tell you." And I'm in college and I'm like, okay, sure. I go down there and they're like, "Well, we don't really have any news about your sister. Here's 40 minutes of backstory about what's been happening with the case." Basically, they tell me that your father has been sexually abusing your sister, Alyssa, for your entire life. Your father's not the man you think he is. You have a sister you don't know about. He was like, just all these horrible, soul-crushing things. It just shattered my entire existence, essentially. But this comes directly from the police, and I still didn't believe it after that. Mm-hmm. I campaigned for my father for years after that, until I kind of went to my family and people around me, and I'm like, "Do you think, you know, Dad could have done this?" And everyone was like, "Sarah, everyone thinks Dad did this. You are the last one to believe this." So it was really hard for me. But once I came around, then I just went straight to police and said, "How can I help?"
Yeah. And where does the pipe bomb manifesto, like, paranoia come in? Like, did you ever have any sense outside of his parenting, outside of the issues with Alyssa? I mean, it sounds like he's just kind of nutty in general with all this stuff. Was there... Did you guys know that as well?
Was he former military?
Former military, former law enforcement. Yeah. So yeah, he was always extremely paranoid. You know, we're in Arizona, which means there's guns everywhere. So there was always guns growing up. It was never anything I thought was abnormal. We have four older brothers that, you know, enjoyed guns as well. But yeah, I mean, I had no idea about the pipe bombs and the manifesto until they came and raided our home. So that's where it comes into play is, you know, the police start investigating and our father is completely uncooperative. He will not sit down for an interview. He will not give handwriting sample. He will not give DNA. He just refuses to cooperate, you know, and he sends them all these weird things like contracts between he and Alyssa that say that she's never been molested.
Well, I mean,
they come raid the house and find the bombs.
To me, he thought that helped him. I think if a father or stepfather or anybody has contracts with a young girl saying, "I didn't molest you," it's like, that's the biggest fucking red flag I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, no, for sure. I don't know why he sent that. I definitely think it's one of the most damning things. But this is a man who also repeatedly told on himself. He called Child Protective Services and said, "My daughter's going to call and lie about being sexually abused." The police and said the same thing and asked if they would arrest her for being bisexual. Like, so many agencies knew that something weird was going on, and unfortunately, they didn't act on any of it.
So I have to ask you about the letter, because we did an episode earlier this week where we discussed the letter, and I was like, I feel like there's been so many advancements in, linguistics and being able to decipher handwriting. And it was basically determined that she wrote the letter. But like, is there any type of thought process where like the letter was old and then it was used later on as sort of like a red herring? Like, what was your take on the letter?
And by the way, the letter is stated like, "I'm running away.
I took $300. Right. Like, you wanted me to leave and now I'm gone."
Yeah, so there's a lot behind that note. It was analyzed, you know, by a professional, and it was deemed to be her handwriting, but they also believe that it was written at two different times. I also have an email from police saying that they believe that, you know, he forced her to write that letter. Right. And there's a few things that indicate that it's kind of old. For example, when, you know, she said, "Dad, I took $300 from you," one of my brothers can point to that incident that Alyssa did take $300 from him weeks before she was gone and returned the money. So yeah, there's a lot of weird things behind that note, and I certainly believe that it was written on different days and that, you know, he did force her in a certain sense. I think the cover story of her taking $300 is also really convenient because she says, you know, "Dad, I saved my money." That money was never touched. So if you add that she took $300, there's your cash element that can't be tracked that could, you know, supposedly say that she made it so far because she had $300.
Right. Everything. The social security number was not active. The bank accounts weren't active. But he can say, well, she had cash, and that's how she got a bus ticket or a train ticket or whatever.
Exactly. And the thing is, like, the bank that, you know, we banked at or whatever, literally you could walk to from our house. So it wouldn't, you know, if you're running away, it wouldn't be a matter of, oh my gosh, if I go to this bank, he's going to know which direction I went into. It was literally on the next main road. So if she goes to the bank and takes this money, she could have still gone anywhere. It would have been no indication as to where she was going. So there's no reason if she really ran away that she didn't take that money.
Where does Alyssa's biological father factor in? Was he just out of the picture? Has he been cooperative? Is he in this with you, or what's the rest of the family dynamic?
Sure. So yeah, like I said, he's been out of Alyssa's life since she was 2.5 years old. But as you know, media started coming up, he did resurface, and he is now a part of, you know, basically just working with the police.
Was that nothing, you know, bad there? It was just, you know, a family situation didn't work out, like go be with your stepfather. But was there any issues there?
There's some weirdness. There's some allegations. There's, you know, a story that my brothers can confirm that this man tried to run over our father with a car. There's just a lot of drama there. Mm-hmm. But nothing I would say is directly related to Alyssa's case.
That's what's weird. That's what's tough is, like, and I can imagine that this is probably a problem maybe for you with, like, police departments. It's like, there's going to be family drama. There's always, you know, in that letter saying, like, Sarah, you said you wanted me gone. I'm like, I'm sure sisters have fights. I'm sure parents can be weird. I'm sure, you know, everybody's got maybe not skeletons, but just weird shit goes on. And then when that's kind of brought up as like a deterrent or a roadblock for like a murder or missing persons, that's got to be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that is just drama, but there's so much that isn't drama that really, you know, solidifies this case. Like Alyssa literally told a teacher that my father was dating when she was 9 years old. She went up to this woman and said, "I'm having sex with my dad." Like there's such a backstory to this. You know, our father was a deputy sheriff for Maricopa County from 1970 to 1974. And he resigned shortly after, you know, he attempted to tamper with the crime scene of an attempted homicide that his brother committed against his wife. Like, there's just so much to this backstory.
Your father's brother committed murder, and he was on the case.
It was attempted murder, and the Phoenix police have determined in their police reports that our father tampered with the scene while he was a police officer. He like put bullets in his pocket. He possibly tried to put a knife in this woman's hand who was shot to make it look like self-defense. So there's a long history of him kind of engaging in this, you know, criminal behavior, as well as a very long history of him sexually abusing people that were close to him, you know, especially in the family, like his first wife's sister, my mom's sister, and, you know, lots of things going forward.
And this is what the police in Phoenix are saying. It's all hearsay. It's all just stories, but we don't have any proof. So if you know, you said you had something like 25 people or whatever have said, "I've heard these stories." You have other people who have been harassed, molested, harmed, whatever, but that's just not enough in their eyes to move forward on anything.
That's what they say. I mean, in that meeting in 2019, they say, you know, we don't have any allegations. And I'm like, hello, your department released these allegations to ABC 2020 and they aired for all of America to see in 2009. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Mm. So that's when I say that they're lying to me. That's what I mean is literally you thing on ABC 2020, including that, you know, Alyssa told people things that were very graphic, very detailed things. And then they turn around to me and say, no, that didn't happen. You know, they in that ABC interview say, we want to look in Desert Center, California for Alyssa's body. And then they tell me there's nowhere we can look for Alyssa's body. So, yeah, I would say that that's lying. Why are you telling ABC News one thing and telling me something completely different?
Speaking of like the body, wasn't there something, I can't remember what it was, but there's something about coordinates that were linked to your father, where it was like they found bones where the coordinates were, something like that.
So there's two sides to that. So I found a map with a lot of locations in California circled, and they happened to be in the middle of the desert. I'm sorry, what was that?
Like you found this map like in your house amongst your dad's belongings or like what?
Yeah, I found it in a box full of stuff that I had transferred from his house. You know, I'm just like cleaning out my house and I find it and I freak out. And unfortunately, I don't make a copy or anything. I just give it to police and nothing came of it. Because at this point, I'm just trusting the police. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have no reason to not trust the police. I just hand it over. I don't want it. I'm not qualified. But unfortunately, those spots were never looked. But, you know, there was also this element of them finding these bones. Apparently some hiker came across bones near where my father says two assassins killed Alyssa. Again, a huge backstory. But those bones were tested. They believe that they might be male and older than, you know, Alyssa. So it's very unlikely that those bones are Alyssa's. But they are something that I've fought to be retested and they will not.
Do you think that was like that's someone else he killed or someone like if you have coordinates and you circle a spot on a map and there are bones there, I feel like that just speaks to maybe not Alyssa, but some other sort of fucking weird behavior.
He was blaming that union and then that union was the place that he was trying to bomb with the pipe bombs.
Correct. So I don't believe that they found the bones exactly where the coordinates were. Yeah. And, you know, my dad says that he killed these two assassins, but they, you know, and you guys talked about it. They looked into it and those guys did die from natural causes long before Alyssa was gone. They were real people. But my father was also found with a social security card with one of those guys' names on it when they came and raided the house. Like it's weird, right? Because you think it's such a crazy outlandish story and then you find something like that and it's just so weird. I don't know how else to say it.
And so it sounds like anything short of a body or
a confession.
Confession is like nothing else is meeting their standard of evidence really, huh?
But it has, you know, they did tell me when my father said to me, come to the deathbed and I'll give you all the honest answers you want to hear. They said that's not good enough. We can't accept that as evidence. But, you know, a week after that meeting, I get that email that says, just kidding, we're going to go ahead and move forward and present this case for prosecution. So, again, I don't know what happened between that week of me standing up for Alyssa's case and saying good luck explaining this to the whole fucking world. Wow. When this gets more media attention. And that was like, OK, yeah,
maybe that like scared him.
I would have to think so, to be honest.
If I'm in law enforcement right now and I've seen Serial and The Jinx and Making a Murderer and the endless list, even if it's not out of the goodness of my heart, like, hey, we should do the right thing for this girl and her family, I might be like, I'm not going to be the villain who's on the hook, you know, with America hating me because I look the other way on this shit. Which is why part of me thinks it's amazing that doing this and the true crime fad can actually have tangible results. Part of me also is like sickened that that's what it fucking takes, you know, like
right.
Shit would not get done if there wasn't Netflix and podcasts and the like, you know?
Yeah. Like you don't want a documentary to come out from her perspective. And then the end say the police department was reached for comment and no one responded. Like you don't want that.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't standing up for the police, but I was thinking in that episode where you're saying like, you're lying to me. I can see an element where it's like, I'm new to this department or I wasn't originally on the case. It's a lost cause. I got a lot of other shit to deal with. There's politics and bureaucracy. And that maybe it's not blatantly like a conspiracy against you, more just like laziness and indifference.
Complacency.
And like it's a hopeless cause and I don't, you know, but enough. But fuck that. I mean, that's your job. That's not how it should go, you know?
Is that how you feel? Like, do you feel like they were like, well, we got him on something else, so that's the same. He's in prison. It doesn't matter. Like, we don't have to really get him on something else because he's already in jail. Do you think that there's an element of that here?
I feel like at some point, the two detectives that worked on Alyssa's case for 10 years were just prevented from going forward. And I don't know why, because they did tell me and other people, you know, they told other people that my father would never get out of prison. They told many people that he would be tried for this when he did get out of prison, so that way he couldn't combine sentences and serve less time. And I really believe that those two detectives wanted this to move forward. My God, it was 10 years of their life. There's no way that they were like, eh, just we forget about it. Like, we don't care anymore. I just don't see that as being plausible. So I think whatever happened when it got to the top, they said, we're not moving forward with this. Maybe it's not worth our time. I don't think it's this huge conspiracy against me or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think it probably does lean more towards laziness, more towards this isn't a completely open and shut case because we don't have a body. This is not a guaranteed win for us.
Right.
So we're not going to waste our time. I think I lean more towards that as opposed to, you know, like, some crazy conspiracy.
Well, that's what I hope, though, that pressure like this, it's like, well, it is worth your time now because you're going to be, you know, vilified in pop culture, and that can be just as, you know, detrimental to anything you know, in your career. But it's like, so when they finally did submit, are you now just waiting still? Is that what happened after that?
Yeah. So they really, really dragged their feet. In my opinion, it took them 18 months to fulfill everything the state asked for. And it wasn't until just a few months before, or really a few weeks before they finished submitting everything, that they assigned a bunch of people to it to finish it up. So, yeah, I mean, the case has only been in the state's hands for like 2 weeks or something. But, you know, when they first said that, they told me I would know in 2 weeks and then another 2 weeks. So this has been 18 months of me wondering every single day if my father's going to be arrested today. And on top of that, the police released the news of this prosecution to NBC News, which was terrifying. In my mind, you know, I begged them. I prevented this story from coming out before because my biggest fear is that my father kills himself and then this case goes away forever. And that doesn't seem to be a concern of theirs. So yeah, it's very scary right now. Every day is torture, and I just sit here and wait to see if I'm gonna, you know, see it on the news.
Are you worried for yourself at all?
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my goodness, he's like 10 minutes from my house, last I heard.
That's terrifying. Like, are you taking any like precautions, or are you, you know, do you live alone? Are you, I mean, that sounds, I would be, I was joking around, half joking, like, I'm afraid to even be in the mix at all, because I, you know, this guy sounds like a fucking lunatic.
Yeah, and a lot of people feel that way, to be totally honest. That's why a lot of people didn't want to interview for the podcast, because they're so afraid of my father. But yes, I have lots of protections in place. I like to tell people I have, you know, armed guards and a moat and a drawbridge. And but yeah, needless to say, I am extremely safe.
I'm curious about the feedback that you've been getting from the viral TikTok videos. Like, I'm sure, like, you're probably getting, and this is probably infuriating to you, people reaching out being like, hey, I have a tip, or like, hey, like, I saw, like, have you gotten any of that where it's probably very difficult for you to sift through what's real and what's bullshit? And I'm sure there is a lot of bullshit that's coming your way because of the exposure that the videos are getting.
By the way, real quick, 750,000 followers on TikTok now. Even just in, I mean, I looked at your account maybe like, I don't know, a week ago, and you were like 400 something. So, I mean, exploding on TikTok, which I'm sure, as Jared just said, is helpful, but also can be, you know, chaotic.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness, there's been like 80 million views in the past week or something. It's really insane. So yeah, I have been getting tips. Nothing super amazing. I did get one where this guy said, you know, I think I found a grave in the desert and I saw a guy that looked like your dad walking away from it. And of course I freak out, right? But the first way I vet these tips is to go, okay, are you comfortable with me sharing this to the police? Because if they say no, then I'm like, you're full of shit. Like, you know what I mean? I don't. And he's like, yeah, I've called the police twice. They came out here for 5 minutes and didn't do anything. And I'm like, okay, this sounds legit. You know, I talked to my friend in law enforcement. husband, who says that sounds legit. It could be a little sketch, but legit. And I tell the police and they don't answer for like a week. So what do? I go out there myself. I film everything and I try to find it, because what do? I can't trust that the police are going to act with a sense of urgency. And in this case, they did not. Eventually, they did come around and come out and bring dogs and whatnot, which I was really thankful for, because that's never happened. And it didn't pan out. But yeah, I mean, when I get these tips, I submit them to the police. And if I am sitting around for a week or whatever, guess what? I'm going to go out there and film everything. So, you know, I didn't mess around or tamper with anything, mm-hmm. and explore it for myself. And if I find something, I'm going to call 911, because I just don't trust that you guys are acting with urgency and sometimes with the best intentions for Alyssa's case. But yeah, there's been a lot of different tips. People have said, I met her at that pool that you showed in that video. Just stuff like that, but nothing super amazing. A lot of psychics saying, I feel this. Can I read her? I think her body's here. That type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I saw one big thing I keep seeing is recently the new international hand signal for I need help. I'm being abused. Something like you put your thumb and you close it up. And it slightly sort of looked like what Alyssa was doing in the pool that day. But that's like, you know, within the past year. And this is something that happened to Alyssa 20 years ago. So I feel like a lot of people are like good intentions and want to help. But it's like, listen, you're not even remotely close to like, thanks, but don't get in the way here, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same way, you know, and I get why people feel that way. But yeah, I believe that that is a newer hand sign that is not applicable to that video in any way. What I was hoping by sharing that video is that there would be some type of expert that would come forward and say, Alyssa is saying this.
I feel like that is a pretty, if you do, I mean, if anybody's living here that officially really knows sign language, that feels like something you'd be able to, you know, conclude or rule out pretty quickly. What I was reading was that she's signing make and then kind of pointing at him and a sign for stop or something along those lines. But you're saying that there's been no concrete definitive answer on that one?
Correct. A lot of people with a lot of experience have come forward with different conclusions. And so that's what's weird. So I think I need to see who has partnered with law enforcement before and get that aspect, because the police always say, we don't have it from Alyssa. We don't have a statement from Alyssa, which of course she's gone. You're not going to get that. So if there can be some type of statement concluded from this video, that is Alyssa speaking to them.
Yeah. Or was she like hiding at her job at that restaurant, like clearly scared and like hiding behind a wall, be like, why the fuck are you filming me? I mean, I guess this is where, when the police were saying, this is not like tangible evidence, this is not concrete. But I also think that a mountain of circumstantial evidence has to count for something. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're talking about a jury or just regular people who have regular brains, that, you know, it doesn't all have to be perfectly by the letter of the law to at least move forward.
Right. And then also we keep talking about the pool video, but there's another video where Alyssa is saying dad's a pervert and he takes the camera. And why does that video still exist? Like, if he has these contracts saying like sign here to say that like, I've never sexually assaulted you. And then she signs them. And then there's a video of her saying dad's a pervert. Why does he not delete that video immediately?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So what happened when the police raided the house is they took all of our home videos. And, you know, afterwards, I asked for them back. It's the only thing left I have of my mom and my sister. I never expected there to be this dynamic, you know, evidence in there, essentially. But that video is just it's a part of a larger video of us camping. But what you guys don't see is that entire camping video, there's some type of weird tension between my father and Alyssa. Like, I'm trying to kind of, you know, hang out with Alyssa and he's like, leave her alone. She's really upset right now. She like goes and like starts like jumping rock to rock. Like it's very, very weird. You can tell that there's a lot of tension. And then, you know, it cuts to me. I'm the person filming the video and I'm just filming.
Like 12 years old or something.
Yeah, something like that. 10 maybe. I was just really young. Right. So I'm filming it. And essentially, you know, my dad's like, turn the camera off or whatever. I'm sorry, I forget the exact sequence of events, but Alyssa's like, hey, Sarah, dad's a pervert. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, that's funny. Like, whatever. I don't know what's going on. And my dad's like, turn the camera off, press the red button. And then he grabs the camera from me. And I just like laugh and like skip along. But yeah, I mean, I just found that in our home videos. And I remember finding it and like taking a video on my phone and like sending it to my friends. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And they're like, you need to put that out there. This is insane. Like, this is a direct statement from Alyssa. But, you know, I don't think the police see it that way.
How could they not? I mean, it's from directly from the source.
Normal joke or a normal thing you'd ever say. Like, that's. I mean, I got kids. If they ever like said something like that, I'd be like, you don't know what that word means. We have to talk about this. Like, why did you say that? This is, you know, you're confused. I don't know. That his reaction was kind of like, you know, she's saying it and she shouldn't be. And I don't know what the preponderance of evidence is, or but to a normal person, these things are all like screaming that he's at least to be investigated and tried, and you know.
So I have a question. I was watching like a YouTube video about the case, and there was something mentioned about like the Dr. Doolittle tape. Are you familiar with that? What's the deal with that? Because like it was like a tape that existed, but it wasn't like, I don't think that you've seen it, but someone saw it. There was a sketchy source. So like your father was trying to say that he wasn't credible.
Yeah. And to be fair, I didn't believe it at first either until I talked to this person. But essentially, there was a cousin that lived with me, my father, and Alyssa in the late 90s. My father called him and said, you know, Alyssa's out of control. I just need some help. You want to come live with us for a little bit? You can get back on your feet, that type of thing. This guy just, he was an alcoholic. I didn't really go much further than that. But essentially, this guy, you know, it's our cousin. He gets home from work. He got Filiberto's or whatever. He goes to the couch and he wants to pop in a video. And you know, my dad was one of those dads who recorded everything off TV onto VHS tapes to save money or whatever. So he pops in Dr. Doolittle, and it's not Dr. Doolittle. It is a video of a girl that he believes to be Alyssa on our couch, laying horizontally, naked from the waist up with just shorts on. And there's a newspaper over her face, and it's eerily quiet. And that happens for, you know, I don't know how long. And then it cuts to another girl who he believes was Alyssa's friend, in the same scenario, naked from the waist up, just shorts on, with a newspaper over her face. And I didn't believe it at first until I talked to this man and saw how regretful he was. And on top of that, he reported this to our aunt and to our grandma, who essentially just said, yeah, we kind of know. Essentially, there's probably other tapes. Like, they just were aware of it, didn't do anything, didn't report it. And our uncle was like, I can't believe he only told you about the one tape. It was my understanding that there were more. So, yeah. So family sources do confirm that this cousin at least called and told people about it. This cousin also, the moment he saw the video, took out the tape, put it on top of the machine, packed his shit, left, and never came back and never talked to our dad again.
I don't know what to say. Are we saying that this was like, when is this? Like after the disappearance? Is this like footage of her body? Is this footage of her asleep? We don't know. It's just a girl naked with a newspaper over her face. That's the most creepy shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, so it was before she went missing. And there's a few elements to this, right? So our brothers can actually confirm that they found a similar video that was marked something else that contained a sex tape with one of our, you know, a consensual sex tape with one of our father's ex-girlfriends. So there's that element to it as well. But yeah, it's pretty damning, the evidence. And
the girl believed to be Alyssa is not saying anything. Is she moving? Is there...
No, she's just laying there still. And, you know, our father actually used to give us prescription medication quite often. So I don't see that, you know, being out of the realm of possibility in terms of these girls being drugged and literally just laying there.
Right.
Is there ever any, like, child protective services, just not from murder or disappearance, but just things like that, drugs and filming and, you know, or was it all just kind of, you know, in-house, don't ask, don't tell, you're, you know, behind closed doors type shit?
Yeah, I mean, the cousin just told other family members. He went to, you know, our grandmother and our aunt, and they didn't do anything. And I think he was too afraid to report it. It's one of his biggest regrets, he says, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I get, like you said, families have drama, and you don't want to get involved in people's business too much. But But then there's certain lines you cross, like having home videos of naked girls with their faces being covered. I mean, that's just, you can't not speak up on that. That's crazy.
Right.
And, I agree.
And like, obviously that is not just a red flag. It's just damning evidence. But and another red flag here would be how he was this paranoid guy that had cameras in the house everywhere. But then on the day that Alyssa disappears, there's no footage of that on any of his cameras because he says that he looked at the footage and nothing suspicious was on it. So he just got rid of it.
I got it, guys. Don't worry. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Well, and he's told a lot of different stories about that footage. He has said the cameras were never on. They malfunctioned. I had the footage and it was gone. Just like the day that she went missing, there's a million different stories that he tells about everything.
Yeah.
It's, there's any element of, because he's ex-military, ex-law enforcement, that it is like a conspiracy of like protection, or you think it's still more just laziness and, you know, whatever, indifference?
It's hard to tell. It's hard. I really don't go towards a large conspiracy. And for years and years, I would interview and people would say, do you think it's because he's ex-law enforcement? And I would say no. But, you know, with all this movement going on and seeing these stats about officers in Arizona specifically just never being prosecuted for crimes, like mm-hmm. the rates are just so, so low. It could be a factor, but I don't know. I just think that something terrible happened here. It's very obvious when you compile all of these different circumstances and factors. I think it's pretty clear what happened and why there's been no movement up to this point is I have no idea.
And there's been no other person of interest or suspect, right? It's not even like they can say, you know, you're looking in the wrong direction. There's really only one direction to look right now.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, there were people throughout that they looked into that were persons of interest that were eliminated, you know, things like the boyfriend, people she worked with, some guy that worked at her school that would come to, you know, her place of work and get food or whatever. But all those people were eliminated as persons of interest.
So with the boyfriend, the day that Alyssa goes missing, your father picks her up early from school. And was it your father who said that the reason why Alyssa wanted to be picked up early was to break up with her boyfriend, even though she visited him like in class that day, like popped her head in and said, hey, and they were supposed to like go to a party together that night.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Our father says, you know, do you know why I was picking her up from school that day, Sarah? Because she wanted to break up with her boyfriend. And I'm like, okay, that's also not Alyssa. Alyssa was the most straight shooter, badass girl, strong I ever knew. She would never beat around the bush with her boyfriend or be afraid of anyone, maybe except our father. But yeah, he literally, Alyssa, before she left, popped her head in the shop class to her boyfriend and said, bye, I'll see you later, because they were supposed to go to a party that night. She also bumped into another friend and said, okay, I'll see you at graduation, because she was due to go to graduation and that party. And, you know, the last person that ever saw Alyssa was that friend getting into our father's truck, and she was absolutely never seen again.
That is crazy. I mean, how have you, I mean, you sound so articulate and well put together and calm about the whole thing. Is that, I mean, have you just kind of come to terms with everything? I feel like learning and being convinced and believing that your dad's kind of like a monster, and now living this life where you're like immersed in it. Are you good? I mean, I feel like that take a toll mentally and emotionally. What's that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, of course it takes its toll, and I have good days and I have bad days. But for me, it's very black and white. You know, Alyssa suffered through all of this abuse when I didn't. Alyssa's friends have come forward and said, you know, she wanted to move out when she was 18, but she didn't want to run away because she didn't want to leave you alone with him, Sarah. And that, you know, gives you a sense of guilt that really pushes me forward. I always say that this is kind of like my active form of grieving. And yeah, of course, throughout doing so many interviews and having to literally research this case myself, I have become well-versed on it and fortunately articulate. You know, in my past, career experience helps with that as well. I was in, you know, events and marketing and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's what I have to do. For me, it's very black and white. It's very right versus wrong. And this was my only course of action, my first thought wasn't, oh my gosh, let me go tell the whole world about my entire family's dirty laundry. Right. The police told me, sorry, we changed our minds. We're not going to prosecute anymore. Your best chance is to get media exposure. And I took that very seriously and crafted it into this whole movement that has happened. So it's been 3 years of me doing this. I think I have become a little hardened to it. It just is what it is. I tell this story a lot. It's just a mission. And I've kind of spearheaded that. You know, no one else in the family wants to do media. Although everyone believes the same thing, I was the last person to come around. I'm the only one that really speaks for her. So I've been forced into this position and it is what it is. I just have to do it. Like I said, you know, she would do it for me and that's what I'm here to do.
Yeah, that's and like, hopefully like, or is it your hope that eventually this gains enough traction, becomes some sort of Netflix special, and then there is like a groundswell of support where there's no way that it could be denied, or there's no way that it could be ignored. Like, is that your primary goal right now?
Yeah, I think it's my only option. You see how media affects these cases. And for sure. I get emails every day from people who say, I want to, you know, create a documentary with you and pitch this to Netflix. Like, that isn't just a bluff with police. There are things that are happening. I'm still getting these emails every day. People are very interested because I think there's something about Alyssa's story that sticks with people. I don't know what it is, but people become very passionate about it. So, yeah, I think that's really my only course of action. I have tried every normal legal route to get the police to do this. But I'm here now and I really hope, and I've seen Alyssa's story is already changing people's lives and affecting people. So outside of wanting prosecution, which of course is what I want, it's something I want to continue to pursue because I've seen Alyssa affecting people's lives. And that is so moving to me and really means a lot.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing too, is that the case, not only is the case still cold or open, it's that there's so much evidence that just slaps you in the face in regards to like what should be done about it. Like we started like this crime podcast and I was telling friends and everyone about it. And everyone kept saying the same thing, like do cases that are resolved at the end, because like when you listen to it, you want that like sigh of relief at the end where everyone knows the conclusion. And then there's just like some anxiety about a case that just like isn't solved yet that people hate. So it's almost like if you put this out in the world, you're going to create that anxiety that they're talking about where it's like, I need to figure this out. Like now you're creating almost like an army of people that become passionate about the same case that you are, obviously for different reasons, but people get so intertwined with it. And we've seen it before where people like bypass law enforcement and they figure these things out on their own. And you're obviously doing that right now. And you're just going to create more like-minded people like yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I understand when people want a story with a resolution. I get it. In my mind, from a family member's perspective, I see true crime as an avenue for advocacy, which means presenting these stories without resolutions. Like, I'm sorry if it doesn't make you feel warm and fuzzy inside, but this is real life. And that's kind of how I end Alyssa's timeline in my podcast, is like, I've thought about the ending for a long time, and I wish I could give you a nice, neat package you could walk away with. But guess what? It's cold, and it's empty, and it sucks, and I need your help. And that's the reality of the situation. So that's the type of true crime I like to make, is this, like you said, this real raw audio. Like, don't just listen to me bitching about this meeting with the police. Hear it for yourself. Hear it for yourself.
I think that's the key, from a, to be like crass about it, from like an entertainment point of view for people who are tuning in, to an effective point of view. When you have, there's unfortunately a million missing persons cases. When you have home video, when you have strange circumstances, when you have pseudo confessions, that's the kind of shit that I think people go like, wait, what? And then you're telling your friend and it's such an injustice that you have to tweet about it and post about it. And I mean, it's horrible and it's creepy and I'm sure traumatic for you, but having those videos and having some of those allegations and the letter, and I mean, it's like a movie. You feel like you're watching a movie, and unfortunately for you and your family, it's real life. But I think fortunately, it's what's going to separate you from other cases, that it's going to gain a lot of traction. And hopefully that's enough traction that the law enforcement agency can't deny it anymore.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, you can literally hear Alyssa sing her ABCs. You hear her at her birthday parties. You hear that audio of her at Jack in the Box calling her coworker, you know, an asshole or whatever. Mm-hmm. You hear her grow up. And that was the point, is I want to make you fall in love with Alyssa. But you also hear this other raw audio from my father. You know, you hear him in the 1970s recording young girls saying, you know, you're really pretty. You're really pretty. And then you hear all these stories about him, and it just helps solidify it. Again, don't take it from me. Take it from these police reports. Take it from this real audio of our father going up to young girls saying this. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a huge element that speaks for itself. And it allows me to step back and not input my own opinion, because there's almost no opinion of mine in that podcast. It is so much case file, so much home video. It's just raw, and it speaks for itself. And I'm very fortunate to have all this footage. But yeah, I think that's definitely the most dynamic piece of it.
Do you think that you'll have the opportunity or even want the opportunity to confront him?
I mean, I have. When he got out of prison, I was like, this is my chance. You know, he's out of prison. It's not going to be staffed with security guards. It's not going to be on a recorded line. And he just taunted me. He was a complete asshole to me. Like, he said, you know, come to my deathbed and I'll tell you all the honest answers you want to hear. He said, I'll agree to everything.
Was that you call him up or was that on the phone or was that in person? And did you say, like, hey, I think you murdered my sister? Like, what was the actual conversation like?
Yeah, so that was in person. It's so long. It's literally two episodes of my podcast. You can hear all the audio, and it's me saying, yeah, I think you did this. And him trying to say, like, well, if you're here to, you know, reconnect with me and have a relationship, this isn't the way to do it. And I'm like, I don't want that.
That's not why I'm here, bro. That's exactly not what we're doing here, man. Jesus.
No, I confront him right away. And he's like, so you really think I killed your sister? And I say, yeah. And he's like, why? And I'm like, to cover up the sexual abuse. And he like laughs like a maniac. He sounds like a complete insane person. He tries to intimidate me by like leaning forward, because we're at like a Starbucks bistro table next to the drive through. These poor people working there. But yeah, he really just tries to taunt me, you know. And he also says, I'll agree to confess if the state gives me lethal injection within 10 days. Like, it's not
that, that part to me was like, you could maybe say, maybe on my deathbed, I'll tell you whatever I want. And that's just, you're frustrated or you're mouthing off, whatever. To say, like, I'll confess as long as I know XYZ is going to happen, that to me is a confession. I mean, that's
right.
I know you need like certain levels of evidence with law enforcement, but again, from a common sense point of view, that is as damning and as red flag as it gets.
Yeah. And Arizona is a one party consent state, meaning that that recording is completely legal. So why they don't take it as evidence is really astounding to me. I really don't understand it. It's the most horrible conversation where he says terrible things about Alyssa. There's no point where he breaks down and he says, I just miss her so much. She was such a good girl. Like, I'm so sad about this. I can't believe you guys believe this. He just deflects and is defensive and really cruel. You know, he's like, you and Alyssa were that close, huh? And I'm like, yeah, she raised me because you were a piece of shit. Like, we were that close. She was basically the only mom I ever had. What do you expect? It's a horrendous conversation. But I'm really glad I captured the audio, because you, again, hear it directly from him. Don't take it from me. Hear it from him when I ask him these questions and come to your own conclusion.
Did you walk away from that conversation with no doubt in your mind that he was responsible?
Yeah, that erased any doubt in my mind that I had. There's, you know, another conversation on there, too, in June of 2019, which is the last time I spoke with him. And I was approached by ABC 2020 and they said, we want you back on because your opinions changed, because I was on there saying my dad's innocent. He could never do this, because that's really what I thought. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, come back on. We want your dad back on. So I call him, ask him. He says no. I say, listen, I need you to advocate for Alyssa. If you really didn't do this and you're really sad about it, please advocate for her, because any interview you do is going to get 1,000 times more traction than what I do. And he basically hangs up on me.
That's such a great point. I didn't even think of that. It's like, okay, fine. If you didn't, then aren't you upset that your daughter is gone, is missing? I mean, it's a stepdaughter, at least. I feel like that's such a part of it too. Biological, treated one way, step treated the other way. It's just fucked, man. And I can't believe, like, even if I was in law enforcement and I was jaded by the whole process and I hate my boss and I hate my cases and all that other shit that stops you from doing this, like, when you hear things like that or see these videos, how do you not, like, clear everything else and at least, or maybe, yeah, you got other work to do, but at least do something for the girl. I mean, I know they promised you the billboards and all that kind of shit, and they just don't ever follow through on it, huh?
Yeah, that, yes. That was definitely one point of contention that just kind of pissed me off. Like, if you never told me that I would have a billboard in every freeway in Phoenix for Alyssa, I wouldn't be so upset about it.
Don't get your hopes up, right? Like, I mean, don't tell me that unless you're going to do it.
Yeah, and that's when they told me they weren't going to prosecute. You know what I mean? They were like, you know, we need a body, we need a witness, we're not going to prosecute. But what we're going to do, Sarah, don't worry, is this huge silent witness campaign. And that never happened. And when I go back to them, you know, I had to go to the chief of police to get this meeting with the commander. And I'm like, listen, I never got my silent witness campaign. And she's like, who told you you'd have a silent witness campaign? And it's like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? It's extremely disappointing and not okay.
While that was, that's probably, that would comfort you in the sense that you know they're trying, but what you're doing is infinitely more effective than a billboard. I totally get that. It's like, if they were willing to do the billboard, that means they're focusing on it and they're cooperating. But just know that a billion billboards is not going to do even a fraction of what your one TikTok did. So, like, kudos to you for taking it into your own hands, because I think some of the measures they even would be allowed to do if they took interest aren't gonna do a fraction of what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I didn't have another alternative. I was on every other platform before TikTok, and I was like, all right, you know, I felt so stupid doing TikTok.
I know.
Slightly inappropriate.
The video you made, like, when all the haters are saying, like, you're silly for making a TikTok and you get, you know, this many views, it was great. It's like, yeah, I know it's for dancing and stupid shit, but you can use it in any way you want, and like, it's working, so fuck off.
Yeah, no, I got so much shit for joining TikTok from like podcast friends and stuff. They're like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, yeah, anything I can, I don't know, bro, I'm just fucking trying it out,
right?
And then I'm like, I have 100,000 followers, you guys need to do this. And they're like, yeah, whatever. And then I'm like, you know, getting close to a million, and I'm like, what up, bitches, you see the fucking article in L about me being in TikTok? Like, you want to try it? Yeah. Now so yeah, it's unexpected.
Like, Are you making like a career out of this? Like, are you going to do other cases? Is this something you want to run with from a professional point of view? Or is this, you know, just about Alyssa?
I mean, it was just about Alyssa, but at this point, I feel like I have a mission, and so many people have asked me for help, and it's been extremely successful. You know, the podcast hit number 8 of all podcasts on Apple Podcasts, which blew my mind. And yeah, now I feel like it's a mission that kind of chose me that I'm very passionate about. And it will be very hard for me to go back to events and marketing and doing, you know, fancy events for fancy people with wine and food and whatnot. It just obviously isn't as meaningful. So yeah, this is definitely something I hope can be my career, because it's just something I'm super passionate about and something that, you know, I'm told that I'm skilled at. So
yeah, well, that's the thing. We've been talking about HBO's doc, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, with Michelle McNamara. And like, she unfortunately passed away, but it seemed like she had the gift of like how to investigate and how to empathize with victims and all that. And we were saying how it's a shame, because as true crime has taken off, she probably would have been, you know, at the peak of it, where other people with other cases would come to her and platforms would want to work with her and articles would be written. And honestly, I mean, you seem like that could be you.
Oh my goodness, that is such a compliment, because I respect her so much, and rest in peace, of course. But yeah, I mean, if I can, I will. I would love to. I'm extremely passionate about it. And I feel like a lot of, you know, creators, you know, and no tea, no shade or whatever, just don't go as far and become as radical as I do with it. Right. Like, I'm just very blunt and to the point. And if I can have evidence to back it up, I'm going to say it. I'm not going to be afraid to say it. So yeah, I would love that.
Well, I mean, I hope that works out, but obviously first and foremost would be some sort of resolution in this case, because it's heartbreaking, it's tragic, it's infuriating from a citizen point of view, and like, your dad unfortunately is such a smug asshole about it that I don't know, you know, I don't know if there could ever be anything where you and your family have solace and you can truly sleep at night, but whatever it is that could bring you guys some peace, I really desperately hope it happens.
Well, thank you very much. I am.
And I said this a couple weeks ago, I think it's gonna. I what you're doing is, at least I can't speak to whether or not you'll feel peace, but I think this is going to grow big enough that they will have to do something. And mm-hmm. I don't know whether he can be, whether or not he can get convicted or what the evidence situation is, but I don't think it's going to be like you just have to give up one day. I think that they will have to take note, because the amount of traction you've already gotten is incredible.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I hope so too.
Do you believe it though? Like, you hope so, but where, if I had, you know, if I asked you right now, do you think that there will be a trial? Do you think that there will be an arrest? Do you think, where do you think it ends up realistically?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. I think that there's a lot of factors that, you know, compound into that. This is also an election year for the county attorney. So she's going to have to answer as to whether, you know, why she didn't go forward with this and basically have the whole world screaming at her. If they turn this down, all I have to do is really say they said no. And people are going to go absolutely insane. They already do go insane over this case. There's just so much public interest that I think that they're kind of, you know, they're kind of forced. But I don't think it's being forced without proper evidence in place, if that makes sense. I think it's always a gamble to go to trial without a body. But Alyssa is by no means the first nobody case that has been tried and won successfully, even in Maricopa County, where the case currently stands. So I feel like they have to give it a fair shot. You know, why tell me for years and years and years that this thing was definitely going to be prosecuted if there wasn't enough evidence?
They wouldn't submit it. Like, again, if they say no, fine. But the fact that they finally submitted it is like, I'm just asking for the first goddamn step, guys. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you at least knocked that roadblock down, I hope it's the first of many more to come. And you definitely got two allies over here. So anything we can do to like promote it, amplify it, retweet it, post it, like whenever there's a new piece of evidence, whenever there's a new whatever, please, you know, keep in touch and send it over, because we'd love to help as much as we can.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to find a neighbor. Alyssa supposedly ran to this neighbor after my father attempting to sexually assault Alyssa. She runs to this neighbor and begs him for help, and the police have never been able to find him. So I think that's going to be my next call to action in terms of social media, because I think if we find that guy, that could be extremely helpful. So yeah, you will definitely hear from me, and I appreciate you guys for having me on, because it's a huge help. You are now a part of the fight for Alyssa. So thank you.
Absolutely, man. Love that. Hopefully, you know, beyond that, professionally, for whatever else you do, like, keep at it, because you are an impressive girl.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
All right. Bye. Bye.